This is Only a Game. I'm Bill Littlefield.
It's so surreal when I was talking to my wife, and I'm like, babe, we did it. Like...
That's LeBron James speaking Wednesday at the Cleveland Cavaliers Championship Parade. The Championship Parade in Cleveland. More on that to come on Three Stories You Should Know. My guests are sports writer Eric Malinowski and ESPN The Magazine's Mina Kimes, both joining me by Skype. Welcome back.
Hello.
Thanks, Bill.
Eric, you have covered the NBA Finals. We might as well give this to you to begin.
Yes. Yeah, so as you said, the NBA Finals went to their farthest, most dramatic conclusion possible. And in the end, it was Cleveland. Yes, Cleveland that was able to
top. That's four times we've said
that
now.
It's incredible. You can't say it enough. It's so unbelievable. LeBron James was, as we all saw, quite superhuman from games 5 through 7. But he also got the help he needed. You know, Kyrie Irving hit the game-winning shot over Steph Curry. And Kevin Love then defended Steph Curry marvelously, you could say, in those waning seconds. And I wonder how this changes our perception of the city of Cleveland going forward. I mean, you could say that so much of their identity has been wrapped, you know, for, say, 5 decades in this, you know, kind of defeatism. But, you know, I was at the Quicken Loans Arena for game 6 of the finals, and they were down 3-2 going into that night. And I have never seen a group of people more ready for a party. So, you know, even if we, the non-Cavs rooting public, may have trouble coming to grips with this new reality, I would say that the Clevelanders have embraced it full on pretty quickly.
Yeah, you know, I feel like I can really relate to Cleveland insofar as I'm a Seattle sports fan. And until recently, I think we were up for the title of most miserable city in sports. You know, the NBA team hadn't won a championship since 1979 and then went away and left the city. The Mariners teams in the 90s and early 2000s were great, but never won. Still haven't been to the playoffs in over a decade now. And the Seahawks were good, but they came so close and lost. And then Super Bowl 48 happened. So people always ask me if I was completely emotionally wrecked by 49. And I really wasn't, I say as I shudder uncontrollably thinking about the ending. Because once you win a championship, you get this kind of weird halo effect that lasts for a few years. So now I would say it's, you know, Buffalo, Atlanta, San Diego, definitely not Cleveland.
I'm going to have to impose a little bit of perspective on this. And I realize as a host of a sports show, this is an odd role for me to play. But, you know, the river no longer catches on fire in Cleveland. That, to me, was the turning point when things got okay for Cleveland. Seattle has great coffee. It has a wonderful bookstore. It's a really nice place, whether or not the sports teams win.
Well, that's why I always feel so weird putting San Diego in the group, you know, with Buffalo, because maybe on a sports level, they're equally sad. But, you know, one of those places is a little grimmer than the
other. I know
other.
Which one I would prefer to visit if given my brothers.
Mina, you've been following the scandal regarding Russia and the 2016 Olympics. Catch us up on that, because things seem to be changing by the hour.
Yeah, so for those who haven't been paying attention over the last year or so, there's been a number of exposés and investigations revealing that there's been systematic and possibly government-sanctioned doping in Russian sports. In November, the International Association of Athletics Federations, which governs track and field, suspended the Russian team. They confirmed that suspension for the Olympics last week. However, the IOC has suggested that some athletes can get around the suspension. And now the latest thing is the IOC, which has been historically somewhat cozy with Russia and Putin on this, has said that athletes who do get around it can walk, you know, out under the Russian flag. The IAAF has said they need to be neutral. So this seems like a symbolic issue, but actually I think it really cuts to the heart of the scandal, which is, in my view, and I think the view of a lot of athletes who have lost unfairly to Russian athletes over the years, the IOC needs to punish not only individual athletes, but also the country.
You know, even just from sort of like a 30,000-foot view, the idea that we're now, what are we, like less than 6 weeks away from the start of the Olympics, and the IOC is still sort of defining which athletes would theoretically be able to compete and under the banner of which flag. I mean, it kind of feels like FIFA level incompetence, which, you know, as we all know, that's an impressively high bar. But kudos to them for reaching for their dreams, you know. But at the same time, I mean, you know, these are the Olympics here. So, I mean, how surprised could we possibly be at this?
Well, perhaps not surprised. You may be right. My feeling is if Russian athletes compete under the Russian flag, the whole business about banning cheaters is going to be revealed as a sham. If there are any Russian athletes who really can prove they didn't participate in this state doping program and those athletes compete under the Olympic flag, I would applaud because I think that might be a step toward eliminating national flags from the games and moving toward a system where the competition was focused on individual athletic performances rather than on flag waving. But that's probably a reach from this current circumstance. I don't know.
Oh, well, I still want the international flag. I mean, that's the great fun of it, right, is these sort of countries coming together and watching and rooting for their flags and their countrymen. But, you know, I agree. Like, if they let them walk out under the Russian flag, that basically undermines the entire punishment because what they've been doing is so systematic. It's not individual athletes. It's not a few bad apples. Mm-hmm. The revelations have just been so incredible that I think it really will take something dramatic to make change.
I know you're both going to be shocked to hear this, but I've been paying attention to soccer. And for some soccer, for some soccer fans, the first Copa America soccer tournament hosted here in the U.S. has been going on in the shadow of the European championships going on in France. Not for me. I really have enjoyed seeing some of the world's best players here in the U.S. while they still are at their best, young enough to be at the top of their game. And I think the tournament has taught soccer fans something about their home team here in the U.S. The squad under Jurgen Klinsmann beat three good teams. Then they lost to a couple that were better than good. But still, am I being unreasonably positive to say the Copa results should inspire improvement rather than provoke despair among American soccer fans? Eric?
No. I mean, I think, like most red-blooded beer-drinking Americans, I was pretty pumped for that Argentina match. I was excited. And then, boy, howdy, that was a really fun 2 minutes before it all pretty much went to hell. But this was a reality check. And I would say that, you know, maybe this is my recency bias from the NBA Finals creeping in. But, you know, I do think that losing is a lot more educational than winning. Jurgen Klinsmann has stated this goal publicly that he wants, you know, assuming he's around in 2 years, but he wants the men's national team to reach the semifinals of the World Cup in 2018. But they have a long ways to go. And I think that this was a good reminder of that.
I struggle with optimism here, mainly because, you know, so few of the players are young. I think only maybe three of the starters were in their early 20s or younger. And then, as we've seen in the U.S., the under 20 team hasn't done super well. The under 23 team failed to qualify for the Olympics. So moving forward, it's like, what does the future look like if there aren't young stars sort of rising to take the reins?
No problem. We'll just all watch the women's team because they always win. Anyway, my guests for Three Stories You Should Know have been sports writer Eric Malinowski and ESPN The Magazine's Mina Kimes. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.